Do you have a favorite cross or crucifix that you might use as an instrument of prayer? I mean, maybe it's the cross that's on your rosary bead, or maybe it's one that you have up on the wall of your house. Maybe it's one that you hold in your hand. Or maybe when you think of the cross and what happens at Good Friday, maybe it's more the liturgy and the ceremony. Maybe it's particular songs or hymns, like "Were you there when they crucified my Lord?" or some of the chants of the Taizé community in France. But whatever of those images, we need to remember that the cross originally was the most heinous form of terrorism, the most terrible form of punishment, of suffering, of execution that the Roman Empire in all of their brutal glory had been able to come up with the intention that crucifixion was meant to placate people, meant to suppress any kind of attempted uprising or any kind of rebellion. Seeing someone who had been crucified, and it was always done in a public way, and the bodies were always there on display in public places, was meant to suppress the people and prevent them from overriding the role and the power of Rome. The church is inviting us to reflect upon the passion and the dying of Jesus, even in this season of ordinary time. You know, we're on the 29th Sunday now, and so next week we'll have the final reading from this section of the Gospel of Mark, which is the end of chapter 10, and then chapter 11. Jesus and the disciples arrive in Jerusalem on what we celebrate on Palm Sunday, the week before he died, the week before the resurrection. And so the last four Sundays of the year, the readings will all be taken from that Holy Week, the events that happen in and around Jerusalem during those incredible days of Jesus coming into his own. And so we have, just before the Gospel today, the third time that Jesus tells the disciples what's about to happen, that this is all pointing towards suffering, his passion, his dying, his being betrayed, his death, but that he will rise again. Two chapters before, in chapter 8, verse 31, Jesus predicted for the first time about his passion, and Peter grabbed him, took him aside, and began to remonstrate, began to rebuke Jesus. The incredible kudos of that, that he's rebuking Jesus for pretending that that was the way of freedom, that was the way of life. In the next chapter, in verses 32 and 33 of chapter 9, Jesus predicts his passion for the second time. And then it's John who gets it so completely wrong in that instance. And he begins to say, "Hey, Jesus, we saw someone doing these mighty works in your name, but he's not one of us. So we tried to stop him." Now, here in chapter 10, in verses 32 to 33, we have Jesus for the third time predicting his passion. And it's now James and John who come to him and completely demonstrate how wrong they've had it. I'm sure you've had that experience of someone coming up to you and saying, "Can you do me a favor?" And you're like, "Well, I really need to know what the favor is before I can commit to saying yes or no." And Jesus is too smart for James and John in the first instance, because he answers, as a good rabbi, he answers this question with another question. "Well, what is it that you want me to do for you?" And then they just demonstrate their utter incomprehension of what has been happening until this point, completely misunderstanding all of those times that Jesus has said, "This is the direction. It's not going to Rome, not going to Jerusalem to overthrow the Romans. He's not going there to raise an army to be the Messiah that the Jewish people had longed hoped for as a military figure. He's the Messiah of the anointed one, the anointed slave, the anointed servant." But they still don't understand that. They still think it's about power and wealth and prestige and position and authority, all of the things that unfortunately the church has often been confused by, and stood in the way of that true freedom and liberation. And Jesus says, yes, you will enter into this passion, into this suffering with me, but I can't grant you those places when I come into my glory. When does he come into his glory? At the moment he's raised on the cross, and those two places are taken by the lestes, by these robbers, these brigands, these people that are attempting to overthrow the Romans. And Jesus is there reminding us that this isn't the way of giving ourselves so fully into what we saw last week, where that rich man came to Jesus saying, look, I've done all the right things, I've kept all the commandments, what more do I need to do? And then Jesus looks at him, loves him, and says, well, get rid of your stuff. Get rid of anything that will prevent you from finding this place of freedom. That's what is missing in this scenario, this opportunity to not trust in ourselves, not trust in our stuff, not trust in what we've built up for ourselves, but simply and absolutely in simplicity to rely on God, to rely on Him, to rely on that love. That it's only when we let go of those things, even if it's only the tiniest thread that binds us, it's enough to prevent us from flying free. That the Lord is wanting us to have this freedom. And the weird thing about the way of Christ is that the only way that we will ever find freedom is by becoming slaves to His righteousness, by becoming slaves to His will, by getting rid of all of those things where I am in control, I am the one who determines and decides every answer, but submitting to the way of God that is inviting us into that true freedom that lets go of all those things, that allows others to tie the band around our waist and to take us to a place we shall not go, to quote from John 21. So Jesus is calling us into that true freedom, the freedom of life, the freedom of being absolutely unencumbered, the freedom that only comes when we surrender, the freedom that comes when we say, Jesus, I don't know where this is going, but I trust in you. I trust in your plan. I trust that you have indeed paid the ransom. You've paid every debt that was ever owing because of my sin, because of my foolishness. That you've loved me and called me into life, and that you continue to invite me into this place of freedom. Let's not make the mistake that the disciples made by being indignant and wanting to find this freedom and to find this glory in the way of the world. But let's indeed enter into the way of Jesus and join him by being a servant and a slave to set us to come so that others might also live. Let's indeed find that freedom by being slaves for the kingdom of God.